Welcome to Chinook. I'm Karen Michelle McPherson. The singing is a performance by two women, throat chanters from northern Quebec.
Quebec is in the eastern part of Canada, and it's a vast province, one of the largest provinces, close next to the Northwest Territories. And I live on the 60th parallel, which in a community called Pouvelnitok, with a population of close to 800.
Pouvelnitok is one of more than a dozen communities in northern Quebec that are directly affected by the James Bay Hydroelectric Project and the James Bay Agreement of 1975, negotiated by the Cree and Inuit people of those communities. Harry Tulugok explains.
In 1973 and 74, the Quebec government, the Hydro-Quebec, which the Quebec government was involved in, decided to dam up the rivers, the Fort George River, and the other rivers, great rivers around the James Bay area. And when the people of northern Quebec, the Inuit of northern Quebec, heard about the project that the Quebec government was getting into, they saw that the work that was to have been done around that area would damage their land, and that they would damage their hunting grounds, and they saw that also that they would not be partakers of any income that would come out of this the project. Once the Cree got word that there was a project, hydroelectric project, going around in their area, they started meeting with the official government officials, and the Inuit of northern Quebec decided to support them. But in the process of supporting the Cree Indians, they decided to negotiate for the land claims. This was a sudden thing, you know. There was no, no referendum of any kind. Nobody was asked. The information that was received from these representatives of the Inuit did not give the full details, and it was a rush type of agreement that they got into.
The agreement ended years of court battles to stop the James Bay Hydroelectric Project. The provincial and federal governments, along with native leaders, negotiated a system of land entitlements and cash payments. And there is a clause in the agreement that reads, "The federal legislation approving, giving effect to, and declaring valid the agreement shall extinguish all native claims, rights, titles, and interests of all Indians and all Inuit in and to the territory." This clause, extinguishing Aboriginal rights, is a source of contention for several Inuit communities, including Harry Tulugok's home, Pouvelnitok. Three communities withdrew their powers of attorney from the Northern Quebec Inuit Association just prior to the signing of the agreement.
They tried to voice their opinion that they were getting these people that were entered into this agreement were rushing too much. These things take time to get the proper, to get the best out of the agreement for the Inuit, but they didn't listen to us, so they formed a committee called ITN, which is Inuit Tungavingat Nunamini. Translated means that the land is their base, in their heritage. You know, the land is theirs.
Leaders of the group that succeeded Northern Quebec Inuit Association, the Makovic Corporation, say they could not do better during the negotiations, that the plans for the hydroelectric project were too far underway. Mark R. Gordon is Makovic Corporation's first vice president.
We knew that we were fighting an uphill battle right away. There was only about 5,000 of us Inuit versus 6 million people in the south, plus all the big corporations that were banking it from the United States. So it was a very unfair fight in any case, and it looked like we would probably never win it. Now, there's one thing that we won a very short victory in when we had the court injunction put on the project, and we stopped the project for a little over a week. Now, what happened was that they immediately went to the courts and asked for a hearing and asked that the decision be overturned on what was called the balance of inconvenience, which means that the 6 million people in the south were being inconvenienced more than 5,000 Inuit, so they had to allow the project to continue while the court fight went on. After that point, we went into negotiations, and that's when we negotiated for a year. Then we came out with an agreement in principle, because we knew the court judgment was going to be coming out within a week or so. And it, as it turned out, 1 week after we came out with the agreement in principle, the court judgment came out negative against us. So we would have lost the fight. We could have, we still had one more avenue. We could have still took it to the Supreme Court of Canada, but we knew our chances were probably one in 10 in there. Now, the opposition began when we signed the agreement in principle, and they said we should have held out for more, and we should have negotiated for a longer period of time, but we would have lost any rights to the land if we had allowed the court cases to make the decision for us. So we had to allow the negotiated settlement to be the only avenue out for us eventually.
The land claim settlement signed in 1975 by the Inuit of Northern Quebec exchanges land and money in return for hydro development in Northern Quebec, power that will be used in Southern Canada. The monetary compensation for both Inuit and Cree came to $150 million, the first $75 million as a cash payment to communal organizations over a 10-year period, half from the government of Quebec and the other from the government of Canada. The second $75 million will be from royalties from the project. $90 million of the total is to go to Inuit organizations and $60 to Cree groups. It's the largest cash settlement ever made to Native people in Canada. To manage the funds, the $90 million, the Makovic Corporation was created in 1977.
We took a look at the Alaska models of what kind of corporations they've created there. And we sought some advice as to how we could make the corporation better or what things to watch out for. in our corporate setup, because in Alaska they had told us they foresaw some problems with the way that their corporations were set up. One of the things that we looked at was how the membership had rights to this corporation. And we found out that in Alaska the shares would be available for sale to anybody after a certain period of time, and this they thought was going to cause problems. We decided that the way the normal corporation structures weren't suited for our needs, so we set up a corporation that has a membership. So when you have a share in Makovic, you can't will it, you can't sell it to anybody. You are automatically a member of the corporation from the date of your birth to when you die, and your children are also automatic members of the corporation, but you don't get voting rights until you're 18 years of age. Now, that was one of the bigger differences. Also, we were told that it would have been preferable to have put some investment restrictions on some of the corporations. So what we did was we took the model of an insurance company for a company that would have to have large amounts of capital over long periods of time. So we used the investments restrictions used by normal insurance companies and applied that to Makovic Corporation, so that we would only release a certain portion of our funds for venture capital.
Unlike most corporate annual reports, Makovic's annual report for 1982-83 doesn't have a financial statement. No listing of assets and liabilities, no balance statement, no figures at all. But there are references in the president's and treasurer's narrative reports to debts and financial difficulty. Still, Makovic retains a number of subsidiaries.
We have Air Inuit, a small airline operation that we've been operating for a few years now. and is in the process of some expansion. We also have Kia Construction Company. We've had some other ventures that failed, unfortunately. Not all of them are successful.
Those who find fault with Makovic's profile point not just to losses, but also to the question of the corporation's own support for native hire in their businesses. Harry Tulugak.
There have hardly been any jobs created for the Inuit themselves. They have formed businesses, corporations, airlines, and construction companies, and so on. But there are no jobs for the Inuit people in northern Quebec.
Gordon admits that a lot of people have been imported to fill jobs, but he says money is just one aspect of the James Bay Agreement.
We also established a regional government under that, and that gave us authority over our own villages, which we were never allowed to have by the governments. If you take the example of education, under the provincial system of schools, we are allowed to have a parents' committee. Under the federal system, we weren't allowed to have any say at all. The federal government came in and you went to school and that was it. Now, under the provincial system, they were a bit more democratic. They allowed us to form parents' committees in each community. And they gave them authority over two matters. One was to hire and fire the janitor, and the other one was to hire and fire the guy that picked up the kindergarten kids with a skidoo each morning. Now, you know, we could say, well, we haven't received anything from the James Bay Agreement, but at least now we have total control of our own education system. That's one thing. The aspect of health services was also something that we had to negotiate and clear up. Now we've managed, under the James Bay Agreement, to be able to centralize the health services and have them run by our own health corporations and our own health board.
How about control over lands?
On lands, there was we had absolutely no say, absolutely none. Now we've retained inland, in ownership, approximately 243 square miles per each community. And there's an additional 3,000 square miles of exclusive hunting areas for the Inuit people in our area. So this area, whoever hunts in these areas would have to have our permission. And there's special protections for this land. They can't just take it away. There has to be accommodations made for us when they do, if they do want to put development on this land. It gives us a stronger interest. And we also gain hunting rights over the other areas, all other areas north of the 55th parallel, an area approximately the size of France.
An inadequate size, says Tulugak.
In our language, we call them little square land, sikitapik. They have ownership of certain areas, and there are little dots in northern Quebec. Like the province of Quebec is vast, you know, and they didn't even get the tip of the iceberg. And it was a total ripoff, as far as we're concerned.
You know, we've never viewed the James Bay Agreement as a final solution. We've always stated that it was only the very bare bones of anything that we would need in the future, and that it was just to acquisition of a few tools to be able to deal with future developments, and that we would have to work with each development as it comes up. Now, we certainly intend to develop our own traditional livelihood more and modernize it in some ways. With technical advances that are being made now, we're being able to apply that to our own traditions as well. So we never had the intention of preserving ourselves back in 1970 and leaving us as we were in the 1970s. And we're advancing now, and we intend to keep moving forward.
Mark R. Gordon, first vice president of the Makovic Corporation of Northern Quebec, an organization formed to oversee the troublesome implementation of the James Bay Agreement of 1975. I'm Karen Michelle McPherson. Chinook is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.